My text is in what was read, Matthew 23 and verse 37, where Jesus says, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem." And then he goes on to say, "How often I've longed to gather you. I've longed, but you were not willing." Let me just ask, what do you long for? When I was a little boy, I used to annoy my father effortlessly. And sometimes my mother, he'd sit outside having a fag and a cup of coffee outside in the garden just to get away from me, I think sometimes. My mother would go out and she'd say, "What do you want for tea, love?" And he'd say, "A bit of peace and quiet." That's what he was longing for, was less stress from people like me, I suppose. Let me ask you, what do you long for? Is there something you long for? Better health, more money, heaven, peace and quiet, better job, to be free from all the COVID restrictions? If you're in Afghanistan, you know, you'd be longing for something, wouldn't you? Syria, they'd be longing for something. Nigeria. In the 1960s, Clint Eastwood had three spaghetti westerns, at least three, and one of them was the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I guess in most job situations, you meet people good, bad, and ugly. I think in most jobs, certainly when I was teaching, there were some conscientious workers, and there were, at the opposite end, some who were absolutely hopeless, useless. I knew a particular teacher who taught French, who was so dull in the lessons that kids did actually fall asleep. And I remember sitting her down and saying, how is that possible? Is it that boring to you then that you were sending people to sleep? But there were other teachers and they couldn't do enough for the kids. They longed for the kids to do well. They longed for all their classes to do as well as they possibly could. That's what they longed for. Let me ask you again, what do you long for in life? In this passage, Jesus is slamming the leaders. "Woe to you," he says, "you snakes, you vipers, you hypocrites, you whitewashed tombs." You know, he slams them. "You are so selective," he says, "and what you say and what you do, what you teach and what you practice. You're obsessed with the outside of the dish," he says. Looking good, your reputation, how you come across, but inside you're filthy, you're stinking, and that's what needs to be changed, he says. "You appear righteous, but you're full of internal wickedness. And all you do," he says, "is for people to see. Your moral standards are to impress people. You show off with your long prayers. You like the blind leading the blind." And then after all those woes, is my text. It's a magnificent text. After all those woes directed towards the leaders in Jerusalem, he says, without minimizing their sin now, he still says, "Oh, I've longed to gather you." I have. I've longed. He offers hope, even to them. Even to them, the ones he's woed at, you know. I remember a fellow from Zambia preaching. It was a very young Christian. And I was ashamed of myself that week. I'd felt I'd been such a poor witness, Christian witness at work. And as he was preaching, this fellow, I always remember, he said, he was talking about Jesus on the cross. And he said, "Maybe you feel like a hypocrite tonight." And there was me sitting thinking, well, I don't feel like a big hypocrite. I am a hypocrite. And I feel that I am. And I remember he shouted, "Jesus died for hypocrites." Oh, I could have punched the air, you know. Just that, thank God for that. That's it, isn't it? And here's Jesus having said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa," to them, and rightly so. He says, "How often I've longed to gather you. I've longed, but you wouldn't come. You weren't willing." Now, we've come across this before. Jesus talking to the leaders, saying, "You do this, look, and you do that, but you don't. Won't come to me to have life." And I just want to stay with this longing. Just this one word, this one theme this morning, the longing of Jesus for you and for me. It's astonishing. It's a remarkable thing. I think Andy Murray first played at Wimbledon in 2005. And I suppose every day after that, and certainly for years before that, there was one longing: to win Wimbledon. 8 years then of practicing and preparing and training and disappointments and matches and injuries and all those things. 8 years later then, in 2013, his dream comes true. The longing is fulfilled. relentless training, relentless striving, all the tears and the disappointment and the sweat. But in the end, the longing fulfilled. Have you ever longed for something? Are you longing for anything now? Often my wife will say, ask me, where do you fancy going for a walk this afternoon? And 99 times out of 100, my answer is, whatever you like. Whatever, I don't care. And I don't care, it doesn't matter. I don't like walking anyway, so as long as it's not more than 3 miles, I don't care if it's along the canal or down the beach or up the mountain, I don't care, it doesn't matter. But there are some things that are not in the group of whatever for me. They're more important than that. And you think of yourself. There are things that I care about a bit. There are other things I care about a lot. And then way above that is the level of longing, isn't it? Longing. There was a great song in the 70s, I think it was, Cat Stevens, I long to tell you. I always remember, I'm not sure if that's how it opens up. I long to tell you that I'm always thinking of you. And I was just thinking of that song this week, and how if I'd only been willing to just stop and think in my life, Jesus was singing that to me, really, for years. I'm always thinking of you. I long to save you. I long to rescue you. Which is much stronger than I wouldn't mind seeing you. There are people, you know, I got in touch with somebody yesterday. I think he's probably going through a tough time. I just texted him and said, if you ever fancy, having a chat, a cup of coffee or whatever, and I leaving that with him. Well, Jesus is not offering a cup of coffee. He's offering to save us. And he longs to do it. He's not a reluctant redeemer. He longs to save us. You get a little infant and they're crying and you give them a new toy and they play with it for a few minutes, but then they're crying again. And you pick them up and you sit them on your lap and you sing silly songs and bob them up and down and they stop crying for a while. But then they're crying again because they're longing. What are they longing? They want food. They're craving. They're longing. And here it's Jesus who does the longing. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, I know what you're like, he says. But oh, how often I've longed for you to come. I've longed, you can feel the passion, man. I've longed to gather you. I've longed, but you will not come. You weren't willing, you wouldn't. You've got to realize, if God didn't make the first move, if God just sat in heaven with his arms folded and said, well, if they want to come to heaven, they can. Everybody in the world would be damned. God makes the first move all the time. That's why you're here now, because God has been after you, some of you, for years. The film Titanic, terrible film, but there we are, 100 Oscars or whatever they did. There's Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio, and they're in this fond embrace, they're snogging, kissing and cuddling, but there. If an officer bursts in now and grabs hold of Leo and says, it's okay, son, I've come to gather you. I've come to rescue you. I've come to save you. Well, Leonardo didn't want to be saved from Kate Winslet. But an hour later in the film, that goes on for about 8 hours, it seems, but an hour later in the film, if the officer was able to get into the water now, there's Leo frozen to the marrow, clinging onto a bit of driftwood, slowly dying. If somebody was to jump in now and say, oh, I've been longing to rescue you, I've been longing to gather you, come with me. It's different now, isn't it? The problem is, some of you don't see that you are in the water. You're drowning. And let me repeat, Jesus is not offering a cup of coffee. He's not saying, oh, think it over, and it doesn't matter, whatever, No, he's not saying that. He's longing. And what surprises me as I've been thinking about this all week, he doesn't long to crush them. I was just thinking of myself. He didn't long to crush me. He didn't long to eternally embarrass and humiliate me. He longed to rescue me, man. It's not about us feeling better about ourselves. That's not what heaven's going to be. It's going to be us falling down and at the feet of Jesus and telling him how great he is forever. You know, we need rescuing from ourselves, don't we? You know, if only Boris and Biden and Putin and all the others would see that they need rescuing from themselves. You know, I remember in the early days when I used to travel up and down the coast here looking for any Christian thing that was going, and some were, you know, just crazy, and others were deadly dull, and, you know, there was all sorts in between, really. And you'd meet people, and they'd gathered into this fellowship, and it was like a victim mentality. They'd all gathered. It was a self-pity society. And I used to think, oh, I got to avoid these people. Don't they realize they have sinned against God? They'd all have this sob story. Somebody treated me badly. I just, oh, come on, man. Well, what about what you've done to Jesus? And yet, to people like that, and people like me, and people like these Pharisees here, and the others in Jerusalem, Jesus says, I've longed to gather you. I've longed to gather you, just like a hen gathers her chicks, puts them safely under her wings. I've longed. It's a startling picture. I remember somebody saying, oh, you know, I wouldn't mind becoming a Christian. And somebody else telling me, kind of the same day, I'd quite like to become a Christian if God would get a move on. I just think, okay, you wouldn't mind. You'd quite like it. Jesus longs. You'd think it'd be the other way around. You think we'd be saying, oh, please, oh, save me, will you? And Jesus saying, well, I think about it. But it's not. It's Jesus longing for people like us to come. And some of you haven't come in here, and some of you listening on, you haven't come. And he longs. What a difference in attitude Jesus has. He longs. You know, I read of a mother a few weeks ago who'd been searching for, been separated from her child, you know, from almost from birth, you know. I've been searching for her daughter for over 30 years, relentlessly searching, and in the end found her. Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Because the longing, and here's Jesus. He longs. You know, does this do anything to you? I remember a men's class in a Sunday school we used to have in the previous church, maybe about a dozen perhaps attending on a Sunday afternoon. And there was one regular attender. He loved to speak. He spoke very well, but it's mostly biblical nonsense. But he spoke with confidence, nonsense. And he took issue once as we were going through John's gospel because I had said I had wasted 37 years. And he took issue with it because he said, no, no, it's not a waste. No, no, you've achieved that and you've done that and so on. And I was just thinking, I'm thinking again this week. Let's think for a moment then. Here's Jesus longing for me, and here's me saying, no thanks. If that's not wasting your life, what is? When Jesus longs to gather me and I'm saying, I can't be bothered to listen to anything to do with this. I'm not interested in church or interested in this religious stuff. And all the time Jesus is longing. It's much worse than wasting time, isn't it? For some reason, I was useless at English, particularly English Lit. I was bored to tears. But there was one poem I can still remember. Not all of it, but I still remember it. And it's about a highwayman, and he's in love with Bess, okay? And Bess loves him, and he loves Bess, and he promises Bess he's going to come. I'll come for you at midnight tonight. But there's somebody who also fancies Bess, Tim. And he's listened, and he knows that this highwayman's come in. So Tim has all his mates together with their muskets, their guns, you know. They're going to kill the highwayman when he comes. And they tie Bess up. They gag her. They tie her up. And they tie a musket again to her chest. And she's tied up. And the only thing she can move is the finger that's on the trigger of the musket. And, of course, the highwayman's coming. And she hears the horse. Oh, she loves him. She loves him. And he's coming. And because she loves him, she doesn't want them to catch him. She doesn't want them to kill him. So she warns him in the only way she can, by pulling the trigger. It's love. It's caring That's what it is, love. Love is caring more about somebody else than yourself. That's what love is. And as, of course, as she pulls it, as the blood pours down, her lover is free. And, you know, here's Jesus. He's on the cross. Before he's on the cross, he's in Gethsemane, sweating drops of blood. Why? Because the price he's got to pay to rescue me is phenomenal. It's enormous. Has he gathered you? Has he gathered you? You know, you talk to most, I'd have to say most Christians you talk to, and they go, oh, yeah, as if I am offering you a cup of coffee. Does it mean anything to you? That years and years, Jesus longing to gather you, and now apparently you say that he has? Or is Jesus saying right now to you, I've longed to gather you, but you're still not willing to come? Amen. We'll sing a song to finish.